A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
G'day there, Dan Illich with Irrational Fear Lite this week. Yes, it is a light version, just me and a guest. You'll meet them in just a second. Just kind of warming up for the next 10 weeks of regular recording. It's going to be exciting. I think we might have a sponsor as well. So next week, I'll tell you all about that on Irrational Fear. In the meantime, I'm recording Irrational Fear on the land of the Gadigal in the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair gum, and Section 40. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, Sydney takes over Canberra as the most expensive city to rent in Australia. In order to win back the title, Canberran landlords are increasing levels of mould. And after Mark Zuckerberg released his new avatar with legs, he's promised to invest another $10 billion to develop a personality. And Qantas has hit a huge profit for the first 6 months of the year, earning $1.3 billion before tax, most of which they discovered was stored in baggage lost in Broome. It's the 14th of October, just weeks away from a Stage 3 tax cut. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear.
Welcome to Irrational Fear. I'm your host, former coach of the Manly Sea Eagles, Dan Illich, and this is Irrational Fear Light. Just me and a guest talking through a few stories, having a bit of fun, catching up, seeing someone face-to-face. Oh, it's good. It's going to be good fun. And what a guest we have, journalist, thinker, doer, and most crucially, my neighbour, Sarah Wilson. Welcome to Irrational Fear.
I think it's absolutely apt that I'm on the diet version of the show, don't you? Because that's the reputation I've always had peddling a diet.
Yeah, this is perfectly fine. This is the sugar-free version of Irrational Fear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I quit sugar. I don't know if everyone got that memo, but yes, I'm still associated as a diet person. I've never been on a diet in my life, Dan. You've seen me eat.
So, like, yeah, I have seen you eat, and I've had burgers with you.
I'm robust.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, when you say you've quit sugar and you quit, yeah, quit sugar, are you now back into sugar? Are you now investing,
double
downing on sugar?
Yeah, double negative.
Are you boosting sugar?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, nothing's changed. It's just that I'm not caught up in the tedium of running a business, which is just not my thing, right? And also a commitment I made to myself, blah, blah, blah,
yep,
that when it made a certain amount of money, I gave it all away.
Well, would you believe it? I'm not committed to running a business either. That is why we need your help on Patreon. Please,
hit us up
on Patreon. Can I say, Sarah's also got an incredibly interesting and thought-provoking Substack, and she promotes us on Substack. But my partner loves your Substack. She is absolutely enthralled with the stories of your travels and insights that you gather from people you meet on the road. It's a terrific Substack. You should.
I enjoy writing it. It's a nice realm to be in, isn't it? Just having worked for News Corp for many years and ACP/, Bauer?
The Germans, yeah.
Yes, it's nice just to be, to have my own space where I can actually, yeah, get subscribers who want to read my stuff.
What's it like being your own editor?
Oh, well, there's just typos, isn't there?
You know? All right, let's get into the stories this week. A Connecticut jury awarded nearly $1 billion in damages to 15 plaintiffs who were defamed by conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. Now, this is absolutely incredible. Like, this landed today, $1 billion. Alex Jones is now going to have to pay
these poor people that he spent years defaming over the Sandy Hook elementary school shooting back in 2012. So long ago now, but of course the pain of this is a real thing. Back in August, he was forced to pay $50 billion. He declared bankruptcy.
Texas, yep. To one family. Yeah. And now it's eight families who are going to have to split that $1 billion for defamation.
Yeah.
I think he's set up sort of companies with dad, right? So some of his money's been siphoned off to family accounts and trusts. Bit of sneaky stuff going on, but still I doubt he has enough to pay off, you know, several billion dollars.
There's one estimate that he's worth $300 million, but... Yeah, you know, at the most, that is still a lot of a mushroom-infused coffee beans you have to sell on the store.
Mm-hmm.
He's still selling. Like, he's still asking for money. I don't know if you caught this. This is him during the actual verdict. As the verdict was coming down, he was on air on his show asking his supporters for money still.
From Remington, ain't going to be happening. Ain't no money.
Damages in this case. We award damages to each plaintiff and against Alex Jones and Free.
I killed the kids, folks. I think.
Number one, compensatory damages. Instructions. Fill in both numbers for each plaintiff. Then go.
Now remember, I'm in bankruptcy. We got 2 years of appeals. The money you donate does not go to these people. It goes to fight this fraud, and it goes to stabilize the company. They want us shut down. That's why the ambulance chasers did this, why they use these families. So SaveInfoWars.com. We're fighting Goliath. We'll win because of you. SaveInfoWars.com. InfoWarsStore.com. Double Patriot points, 10% off of 1776 right now at InfoWarsStore. But you see, you want somebody to fight for you? I'm doing it, and you see what they do. So you want to fight? That's fine. It's your decision. But that's where we are. That's the whacked out system of the left. Did we hit a billion, guys?
Did we hit a billion, guys? Like he's like waiting for the big billion to land. Did we do it? Are we the bad guys? Well, yeah, you are the bad guys. But there's complete shamelessness.
He's a narcissist to go
on air at this time as the verdict was handing. If you had to owe someone $1 billion because you were an asshole, would you be doing this?
I'd be shutting my mouth. But that's just not the way he operates. It's really interesting. I don't know. Have you ever followed any of John Ronson's stuff on him? He's been following him for decades, like literally since he was like in his early 20s.
I mean, I remember as a kid watching his early conspiracy theories about 9/11, probably like early 2002, 2003. YouTube wasn't even around then. It was these WMV files.
That's it. Well, John Ronson went and visited him because he was running the program out of his bedroom and literally he had Star Wars wallpaper. Like, you know, he was in his little room with Star Wars, you know, wallpaper with a single bed. It was his boyhood home and that's where he was recording from.
Like from his mum's house?
His dad's, yeah.
Well, that's only one step down from this situation where I am renting to a landlord and I'm recording this from home.
Oh, yeah, so. But just wait for 20 years. Get somebody to follow you now. Get a John Ronson to document your story now. But look, he's an absolute narcissist and that court case, I've listened to bits of it. He really treated it like one of his programs, didn't he? It was a performance and he created chaos. And that's what a lot of these conspiracy theorists, shock jocks, I mean, that's what they love doing. It's what Trump did. They create chaos.
What does this defamation thing mean for people who want to be like, you know, the next Alex Jones, like your Avi Yemenis, your right-wing shock jocks or your crazy left-wing shock jocks who want to kind of peddle in this mistruth space, do you think? Do you think they'll take notice or do you think this is just a sign to get more attention?
I think that it will actually rile people up for a while. I mean, he's still going. He's still making money. He has been deplatformed across all of, you know, like Twitter, Facebook and so on. But then you have the Joe Rogans of the world that get him onto their programs and, you know, spread the message across Spotify. So he's still got a little bit of oxygen, but I do think the $1 billion thing will resonate. I think there'll be anger, his fans will mobilize, but I'm not sure how far it can go when you've been deplatformed to that extent.
Have you seen the kind of stuff he sells on his store, Alex Jones?
No.
Oh, he sells like, you know, supplements and
the usuals.
Coffee beans infused with like mushroom.
But all the broadcasters.
There are these other things you can buy from the InfoWars stores, which are like literally buckets of food you can put in your bunker.
Oh, prepper. Prepper stuff. Prepper yes.
buckets. It's like it's buckets of food that will last for like 10 years in a bucket for when the shit hits the fan. Do you think he's going to be heading down to his bunker to eat some of that food now? Is that the plan? He's got so much of this food in a bucket.
Well, he might join Peter Thiel and buy up land in New Zealand because that's what he's done. He's built his bunker, I think, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Near Wanaka. Yeah, the prepper realm. I mean, that's another realm. Where do we go from there?
New Zealand's too far to go for Alex Jones. He can barely make it out of his parents' bedroom.
One thing that really came up and struck me with the John Ronson deep dive I did over the last couple of days as this has all been going down is he went back and actually spoke to some of his childhood friends. And Alex likes to tell the story of how, you know, his dad took him out of a school, which was just terrible at some stage. So John Ronson went back and actually investigated and found that, in fact, he was such a bully, he actually beat up some guy within an inch of his life. This guy, this was his best friend, by the way.
Are you trying to tell me Alex Jones was a bully?
I know, hard to believe. Hard to believe. It didn't just happen overnight. He isn't just passionate about conspiracies, right? And but his best friend, I think, made a slur about a girl that he was keen on or something like that.
Yeah.
And he beat this guy up within an inch of his life. And this guy's now got permanent brain damage,
oh my
right?
God.
And I think he's in a wheelchair, etc. The friends all got together because they were so sick of being bullied because he was the classic bully. Everyone was too scared to stand up to him. But there was a conspiracy. They all got together on a Saturday night and actually gave him a pounding. And off the back of that, his dad moved him from town.
Right.
They moved to another place.
Right. So yeah, he tells this story about
slightly different version of the story, right?
Yeah. He's not the victim here.
Mm.
Irrational fear.
I just don't want to catch him in bed with a goblin. I don't want to see him kissing goblins, having political succubus with goblins.
Irrational fear!
This week's second fear. Meta is kind of going through this bit of an epic transition because Facebook is struggling. Not many people are using it anymore. So they've got this big idea to kind of start the metaverse, as people know. It's this VR experience. And the share price of Meta has tanked. It's like half of what it was a year ago. And the metaverse is trying to come to be and everyone's trying to push metaverse on everyone. But here's the thing, not even the people that work at Meta actually want to use it. This great report from The Verge came out today say that the internal memos are saying that not enough people are using the metaverse at work. And if you can't use it at work, how are people meant to use it in their everyday lives? And
well, it's affecting the development, right? They're saying that the developments aren't happening fast enough because people aren't getting native with it.
Yeah, and so people don't know how to use it. People hate using it.
Like, and they can't fix the glitches, yeah.
And people that work at Meta just don't want to use Metaverse, isn't it?
This headline pops up in one form or another every 6 months or so. We love a headline that says Silicon Valley don't use their own products, right? One of my favourites is all of the big heads, including Steve Jobs and Bill Gates as well. They send their kids to Steiner schools where they play with wooden blocks and technology is completely banned.
They're like, please, we need to get away from technology as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real thing. And I think it was only a couple of weeks ago, some inventor of some big game doesn't let his kids play it. So it's not a new concept. This is slightly different because they're saying the product's shit, I presume. But really, it's a reflection on the metaverse, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the whole VR dream. Like, I'm seeing this happening more and more. It's a discussion I'm seeing, Dan, with a number of my guests on my podcast where we actually do talk about the fact that this technology, AI in particular, is just galloping ahead. But there's quite a few people, including the people who are inventing the technology, who are going, hang on, do we want this? Is this what we actually really want? And I think that question's becoming very, very loud.
You are correct. This is a great insight. Nobody wants this universe. Currently, there is a great experiment happening with AI, and somebody has managed to stitch together an AI Steve Jobs being interviewed by an AI Joe Rogan. Just from everything they've all said, I'm going to play a little bit of it for you so you can get a feeling for what it sounds like. We'll play the first couple of minutes and just hear kind of the back and forth from Steve Jobs and Joe Rogan. It is pretty uncanny.
Welcome to another episode of the Bro Jogan Experience. And on this episode, I welcome my friend who's difficult to describe. I'm fascinated by him and I hope you'll be too. And he is weird, and brilliant and sometimes totally insufferable. So super psyched about having him in the house today. First time or, yeah, we've had you on before, but not for a long time. You're like Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore and Ghost. You're a memory from the past. So without further ado, my friend who is difficult to describe and wonderful, and I'm so grateful he came on the show.
How's it going? Good to see you, buddy. It's been a long time since I've been on the show. I've missed this. It's always fun.
How's it going? Come on, tell me about jobs. It's always good to see you, buddy. I'm so happy you came on, man.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show. Your audience is just so different from your normal Apple users, and that's a good thing. It's cool.
Isn't that uncanny?
It's a bro mashup. Right? I mean, it's Silicon Bro meets Pod Bro.
And the AI is probably developed by white bros.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I don't know if they realize just, yeah, the irony, the triple irony, the triple pike irony going on there. It's really interesting. I like how it segues from our last topic.
Yeah. It's
beautiful.
Incredible.
It's so meta. I mean, well, that's where we've arrived, Dan, where everything is sort of knotted and gnarled around everything else. You know, you've got these conspiracy theories. Like, we can't tell the difference between who's a left-leaning person and who's a right-leaning person. Like, everything is so fragmented and mashed up now. It's so difficult to know what's real. And AI just reflects that.
Yeah.
Like, where does reality start and end?
I never thought I'd need to use like DALL-E or something. I could never see a use for it for myself. I'm like, who wants to create a spaceman in a field of poppies? Like, why would I need that? And the other day I could see how I could just put out a whole bunch of people out of business because I was putting together the Irrational Fear show live at Festival of Dangerous Ideas, and I needed a bunch of graphics done in a hurry. And I hired a professional graphic artist to do it, but I'm like, wow, in about 4 years' time, I could imagine these jokes as graphics, put them into a thing, and they'll spit it out, and I'll be able to use those graphics instead of hiring someone. And I immediately went, shit, it's actually scared me. Mm. Like, the person I trusted to put these graphics together, Pat Forrest, did an incredible job, and they're hilarious and beautiful and stunning images to get jokes across to the audience.
But is this what we want? Because do we want to put people out of jobs? Do we want the delicacy, the imperfection that comes with human creativity to be eradicated? No, I don't think we do.
Well, and also for me, like as a joke teller, like I thought I could never use a program like that because comedy requires a certain nuance to kind of get an idea over in a real quick fashion. But seeing some of these images that are popping out of people's prompts, it's like, fuck, if you're a good prompter, you could absolutely create the image you need to get the joke across.
Yeah, got it. But you still got to have the human to create the joke. You've still got to have the nuance going on.
No, I see. I don't even know.
You don't think so? You think AI can be taught humor?
That'd be funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, the thing that makes me nervous about that, and this is the reason why I hate this game so much, is Cards Against Humanity. Cards Against Humanity is just a non sequitur generator, and people find non sequiturs funny. And if you just jam two ideas up there that undercut each other, people laugh and have a good time and move on. And so it's like, that's the thing that's going to kill us.
That's the future.
Someone's going to work out how to make, you know.
Yeah. Well, the singularity, which is that moment when AI technology is meant to take over from human capacity, they're saying it's this century. Like, it's close. And is there anyone out there, is there a godlike figure, you know, and I'm guessing it's not Joe Rogan or Steve Jobs. Well, we know it's not Steve. Are they sitting down and going, okay, ethical and moral implications of this? And are they just going, AI is made in our image, right? It's a reflection of our intelligence. And when we confront something that's weaker than us, more vulnerable, we kill it. And so is AI going to do the same thing to us?
I'm sure Meta, a company that's that's responsible for the genocide of large groups of Southeast Asian populations.
Yeah,
I'm sure they've got
an
ethical department. I'm sure they've thought it through. Oh, God.
I know.
This is A Rational Fear.
We are still the company that designs technology around people.
And finally, this week's third fear, Sarah Wilson, is the 10th anniversary of Julia Gillard's misogyny speech 10 years ago. It kind of is strange that there are young people out there who are in their 20s who were like 10 years old when this kind of speech came out and they are memifying it.
They're wearing the T-shirts.
They're wearing the T-shirts. It's a weird kind of thing to kind of see how this speech has become mimetic as like a symbol of feminism in Australia.
Internationally though as well. I mean, that's the funny thing about it is that here in Australia, it didn't really make headlines until it made headlines overseas. Because as you know, it came off the back of a bit of a slippery, you know, basis. Peter Slipper was a misogynist. Julia Gillard had vested interests in keeping him in the speaker's seat. Mm. And so that speech pivoted from that. But the American audiences, the German audiences who watched it, you know, virally, they don't know all of that. That said, yep. It also came off the back of many, many years of horrible misogyny occurring in Australia.
Towards Gillard herself.
Yeah, and it's occurring more broadly, as we now know, in Australian politics and in Parliament House. So, yeah, it's interesting. It was always something that took a while for Australians to grasp. I think it was a bigger international phenomenon first.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think people in global spaces saw this speech and were so...
Partly because it was out of context.
Right. Of course, it's very difficult to kind of say, well, let me talk about this guy, Peter Slipper, who's a bit of an asshole. He works for the Nationals.
But he's not in the party of Tony Abbott. So I think there was that, but that's not all of it. It really is because I think Australia, and I'll say it straight, I've said it before, is a misogynist country. And I don't know that we've progressed all that further in 10 years. It's sort of the wallpaper to our existence. And we have to suck it up. We don't do the outrage around it. And I sort of think that we are expected to roll with the punches of it. Misogyny is very tied up in that bloke culture, the larrikin, she'll be right. God, you know, you're the one with the problem because you can't take a joke, that whole vibe. And so when we see misogyny as women, I think, or as, you know, good men, we don't notice it straight away and we don't call it out straight away. We needed it to be seen through the lens of, you know, being these outliers in the on the other side of the world before we felt very ashamed about it.
Speaking of somebody who saw this speech overseas, Ben Rhodes, who was on Irrational Fear a couple of years ago, we were talking to him about climate change.
Yeah, this has resurfaced, hasn't it? Or it became news back then, didn't it, that Irrational Fear exposed this particular story, but yes, please tell us the background.
Yeah, so we were talking to Ben Rhodes about climate change and how, you know, Australia's so far behind and Australia's so backwards, and he was just saying, you guys are so backwards. You know, Tony Abbott is so backwards. Like, we had many debates with Tony Abbott, and we realised, like, talking to him was like talking to a brick wall. And why he was in power, every time we had to deal with him, we watched the misogyny speech. So here's Ben Rhodes.
Oh, what, just for entertainment?
Yeah, here he is in his own words here, Ben.
I did not know that. I will tell you that whenever we were really annoyed with Tony Abbott, we would watch the video of that speech by Julia Gillard.
The speech?
That speech got watched a lot in the Commonwealth. Let me just put it that way.
You know when all those hand-washing videos were coming out at the start and they were like, you need to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds? People were giving you like song lyrics. Yeah. It was like, wash it for the length of Happy Birthday. There were a lot of people who were going, you just need to wash your hands for the length of Julia Gillard's misogyny speech.
Yeah.
All 7 minutes of it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's heartening to know that, you know, Obama and his staff were watching that speech just to feel better about having to deal with Australia.
While we're doing segues, by the way, I actually had on my podcast last week a woman called Marianne Seagart. She's a BBC correspondent. She's been the associate editor of The Times for 20 years. And she wrote a book just recently called The Authority Gap. And in it, she interviews Julia Gillard, or Gillard, about the speech. And there's a bunch of things that she says in there which actually have come out in the press just this week about how she wished she actually had done the speech earlier. She'd actually sat on that rage and that need to call it out for quite some time because she felt that Australians would settle into the idea of an Australian female PM. Well, they didn't, and eventually she felt she had to give that speech. But Marianne and I cover a bunch of things in the podcast, and she's got this great – I've got to share this one. She's got this great study that she references where I think it's something like – it's a huge – I think it's 3,000 children across – or teenagers, male and female, across 9 countries. So it's a meta study, just to bring it all back in. Anyway, they get a bunch of 15-year-olds, male and female, and they present them with a dozen or so mathematical concepts. And the children, the teenagers, are asked if those ideas are familiar to them. Have you heard of these ideas? Do you know about these things? Anyway, in the blokes say that they have heard of far more of them than the women. The women go, oh, I'm not sure, that kind of thing, right?
Yep, yep.
The thing is, about a quarter or a third of them are bullshit, right? They throw in non-concepts, but the blokes still say, oh, yeah, I know about that. I know about that. And the women say, oh, no, I don't think I know about that one. Anyway, the conclusion of the study is that men have a disposition to bullshitting. And, you know, it starts when they're young and it carries on. Anyway, so if we're going to be talking to former male Australian PMs, the bullshitting thing comes through loud and true. But then to bring it back around, she also points out that Obama's staff also had this thing where the women got fed up with their ideas being interrupted and talked over in meetings. And so they got together and Obama picked it. And he actually got the women together and said, hang on, what are you doing here? Have you heard about this?
This is the echo. Like somebody will say a point and then somebody will come in and say the same point and somebody will repeat the point.
Yeah, so a woman will come up with an idea and generally any woman listening will know what I'm talking about. It'll just get ignored. Mm. But then 10 minutes later, a bloke will raise it and, of course, it's a fantastic idea and they own the idea and off it goes. So what happens, the echoing thing is that women get together and go, all right, if a woman brings up a point, we're going to make sure it almost gets, you know, tallied. Right? So great point, Martha. And then, you know, and that's how they do it. And Obama noticed it and the women said, yeah, we've got to do it. Otherwise our ideas don't get heard.
Mm.
So anyway, that was a guest that I spoke to. And since we're doing segues, I think that was a loop-de-loop segue.
Well done. You are the master of the segue.
Yeah.
I don't know where we landed anywhere interesting, but. Well, speaking of podcasts, Sarah, you've got a podcast.
That was a perfect handballs segue. I do.
Your podcast is, you know, it's back in fine form. You're back on the horse. Who have you had recently and what have you learned?
This week's is actually an interesting one. It's a slight diversion. Matt Brown, he's an Australian academic and he co-hosts a podcast called Decoding the Gurus. And it pulls apart these, and again, this is a segue, the Joe Rogans of the world, the Lex Friedmans, the Weinsteins, they actually pull apart these segments bit by bit and put it through a gurometer to see if they're like for real or just got messiah complex. And it's quite controversial. They're all blokes, you know, and yeah, he's an Australian academic based out of the University of Queensland. And then the other one is an academic, he's Irish, and lives in Tokyo. Makes no sense whatsoever. But they've become quite influential. And a lot of these gurus, you know, the Jordan Petersons, Lex Friedman, who else is there? Sam Harris, although Sam doesn't quite fit into that bucket, Russell Brand, they are sort of targets of Decoding the Gurus. Anyway, so I interview Matt about all of this and we go into why it is that this is happening now, what it is saying about our culture, what it's saying about young men and their need for these gurus, for these men that come out.
Why do we need Jordan Peterson to tell people to
have 12 rules to make their bed?
Yeah, to make their fucking bed, yeah.
Mm. Well, if it was as harmless as that, that'd be okay. But the problem is that they go on to spread conspiracy theories and, of course, they all sell the same powders and products online. They all interview each other. So Joe Rogan used to have more women on his podcast. Mm. Now they just, it's just a bro fest. It's a bro orgy. They all interview each other. They all love each other. They all support each other. And when you've got Joe Rogan supporting Alex Jones and Andrew Tate, and then you've got Lex Friedman supporting Joe Rogan, and they all support each other. It's just this echo chamber of, quite frankly, misogyny.
Mm. Well, can I just say thank you for supporting Irrational Fear by coming on Irrational Fear?
Yes. Well, and we did talk misogyny and we did talk Alex Jones, but are we platforming? I don't know.
I don't, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. So with that interview, what's the one big takeaway from that conversation you had with Matt?
Well, I think it would be for my listeners to just be aware of husbands, friends who are listening to these people and be aware of the messages that they're peddling. Just about everyone I know has a partner who loves Joe Rogan. Oh, he's great. He's great. And thinks that their research is legit. It's really not.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, I used to be a fan of Joe Rogan. I used to listen to his stuff.
So do your own research and do your own research on your research is what sheeple. We're trying to say here. Yeah, sheeple. Big thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Also, big thank you to Rode Mics, who sent me a wonderful new Rodecaster 2. Excited to test that out, streaming sometime soon. If you are heading to Purpose next week, we'll be there. We're going to be recording Irrational Fear in the foyer at Purpose. So do pop by and say hi, and we'll catch you next time. There's always something to be scared of. See you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.